Jonathan Etherton is principal at Etherton & Associates and senior fellow of the National Defense Industrial Association, and just coming off testimony to the Senate Armed Services Committee at a hearing on the defense acquisition system and reforming it. Jonathan, what was the key theme that you wanted to convey to the committee? Thanks for your time today.
Oh, sure. Happy to do it. The main message that I had for the committee was that we have several things now that were different in some of the large past reform efforts that may justify taking another look at the acquisition process. And the two things I mentioned, highlighted in my testimony, were the fact that we have better systems in place now and better data and information for tracking performance more in real time than we've had in the past. And that those are capabilities that were unthinkable even 10 years ago. The other thing that we have to work with is the experience of some of the major reform efforts of the past that in some ways fell short of what all the parties intended. And we have that experience to draw on as we go forward.
The second of those is where I'll start. You're right, we have the experience of previous major reform efforts, but we had the experience of previous major reform efforts the last time we tried it and the time before that and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So what have we learned since the last time we really tried to change things that would give you hope that we can do it differently this time?
I guess what I would say is, and I'm just basically always hopeful, but I think one of the, we have a really singular experience going back into the 1990s, where you had all of the major stakeholders, the executive branch, the agencies, the Congress, industry, other outside groups, largely had arrived at a consensus on the direction that we wanted the acquisition process to go, and a lot of that was embodied in the Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act, which was passed in 1994, and then the follow-on Federal Acquisition Reform Act in 1996. And so here was a case where you had this consensus, you had a very strong commitment at the highest levels for certain things to occur, and some of the changes did take hold, and there were some very good things that happened. But we also lost a lot of momentum in what we were trying to do. And so I think that the examples, the more recent examples that we've had, are probably the most instructive. And so, yes, we've had the prior examples, but I always sort of sensed a lot of that was kind of a drive-by exercise. The one in the 90s was one where people really threw in full commitment. And what I tried to convey to the members at the hearing a couple days ago was the idea that if you really want to do this, notwithstanding consensus and energy and everything else, you're looking at a long-term process that involves a lot of oversight after the fact to make sure things are implemented correctly.
And you got right at the heart of that with your testimony. Your written testimony says, it seems clear meaningful reform will likely take several years of sustained and focused legislative process, followed by continued dedicated oversight until legislation is passed. The last major legislative effort that I recall is the 2009 Weapons System Acquisition Reform Act. That was the McCain-Levin bill. And I wonder, 5 years out, what we've learned from that specifically that we can apply to a more broad-based acquisition reform effort, not just directed at weapons systems.
Here's the two lessons that I would derive. Number one, I think that the outcomes and the approach that were in the Weapons Systems Acquisition Reform Act were largely based on increasing your pool of information, basing more of your decisions on knowledge and as you go forward, building a lot more upfront into the process with respect to cost estimating, ensuring that you have systems engineering done properly. I mean, a lot of good, solid things that I think, according to the GAO and I think even the Department of Defense in their assessment of the performance of the defense acquisition system, we're actually starting to see some very good results from that. I mean, things are still very preliminary, and I think it'll take a few more years to see where that really goes. But I think, to me, that was a demonstration of the application of these new tools that allow you to actually monitor performance, make course corrections based on data and evidence, and do some of the work that really you need to do to get these systems or programs on pretty sound footing. So I think we've had that lesson. I think the other lesson that I would say, though, is that in reading some of the accounts of the difficulty of matching the resources that are available to some of these tasks that the DOD has put on the system or were put on the system by Congress, I think that one of the issues that we're going to need to deal with is just the amount of the resources that we're going to have available to do acquisition reform or any even manage the requirements in the acquisition process in a shrinking budget, and to ensure that we match those resources with the aspirations and the mandates and the requirements. And I think that that's still sort of an open issue, whether in fact the department has the resources and the various new offices that were created, and they build those resources over time to fully achieve the goals that Congress intended.
John Etherton's a principal at Etherton and Associates and senior fellow of the National Defense Industrial Association, testifying about defense acquisition reform to the Senate Armed Services Committee this week. The testimony that you gave to the committee is linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we have a video of the hearing there as well, Jonathan. The other main element of your testimony that we talked about at the beginning of our conversation was that there are better systems and better data in place. Frank Kendall has put data at the heart of better buying power. Is it your sense that that effort is headed in the right direction and that he's having people look at the right data as far as what they should be paying attention to?
Absolutely. As I said in my testimony, I think that the first report that we got from the department last June on the performance or the assessment of the performance of the defense acquisition system and the approach and the way that they use data to look at some of the issues with respect to major systems acquisition was one of the best things I've seen come out of the department, frankly, in decades, I mean, really from my perspective. So absolutely, I think they're on the right track. And I think that as we get the new backbone business systems and things in place in the department, we can produce data. We don't need to set up new data requirements, in my opinion, or gather more different data, but I think what we need to do is have the capability to analyze the data that we have, and I really see that moving in the right direction, as well as the areas of trying to get better auditability so that we can actually track where the dollars are and how they're being spent. I think that's all moving in very much in the right direction.
Requirements of another kind, procurement requirements, came up at the hearing a number of times, and you've mentioned them in our conversation so far, John. Are we on the right track there at trying to get our arms around requirements? Because there again, this is something that every time we do procurement reform, acquisition reform at the Pentagon, requirements come up. We have to fix requirements, and yet we find ourselves back in the same place when we go to look at this again however many years later.
I think that is probably one of the most fundamental challenges that we continue to have, because you have some institutional framework around major systems and the requirements there. Through the Joint Requirements Oversight Council and the Joint Chiefs. But I think sort of matching that process up in real time with what's actually going on in the system once you actually start them to really control requirements creep and some of the other things, it remains a challenge. It's one of the most significant challenges that you have, and I think that's something that we're going to have to spend a lot of attention, put a lot of attention toward. I think one of the problems that you have, though, is we have to look beyond major systems acquisition, and even if we solve some of that in that context, that's not where all the money is. I mean, the spend on major systems acquisition is about $70 billion a year out of a, you know, $350-400 billion spend in DOD on various acquisitions that they do there. And so we have to figure out a way to get at requirements for services, IT, and some of the other things that don't fall under the major systems umbrella to do a much better job at that and to develop the capabilities with the workforce and the offices over there to do that. And that has to be a major focus of attention in this.
But requirements creep is not just unique to weapon systems. I mean, I hear about it from the vendors when it comes to financial management systems and all
right.
kinds of things that don't have anything to do with weapons.
Correct, and that's why I say you've got to really broaden your focus and not just cover major weapons programs, because as a percentage of the budget or proportion, that's really dwindling, and you know, in terms of its overall impact. So you really have to start looking at these other realms of acquisition activity, like services, like business systems, information technology, you know, the smaller dollar non-major programs and things like that. It's not enough to just deal with major programs.
Now, the infrastructure, the cultural infrastructure in the Pentagon is legendary. Is it your sense that finally at this point in time, because of the way the budgets are trending and expected to trend in the next half decade or so, that cultural institutionalization is ready to be cracked and that some of the resistance inside the organization might change?
I don't necessarily see that as an outcome yet, but I think that that's an area as I mentioned in the statement, you know, some of these boundary condition issues which really do drive behavior of the system and the success of any of the very specific things that you might do in the acquisition area. We have to figure out some way to reach through the efforts that we're doing to get at some of those larger issues. And I think that will be an incredible challenge, but I think unless we sort of stand up and meet it, I don't think anything that we can do in what normally people think of as acquisition will be successful. But I think it remains to be seen how successful an effort like that can be. It'll be very complex.